balls I always put off. I met friends at concerts and bought albums and sent flowers instead of waiting for the perfect occasion. I bought plane tickets to the Caribbean for my wife and dearest friends, and we went. Once well, I couldn't go back to deferring my life under the guise of saving. I still save some, but now I feel compelled to use whatever money I can afford to make love work, to bring truth into being, to allow generosity and compassion to flourish. This is more than altruistic. It's necessary to be fully alive. It's part of the wood that keeps the inner fire burning. I am now forced to ask, beyond rent and health insurance, for what are we saving? If the love we have is not brought to life out here in the world, we risk saving for a future that may never come, or that in fact may find us just ghosts of spirit, unable to live it because we've squandered our chances to love along the way. For your meditation, sit quietly and meditate on the love you carry for someone dear. Breathe deeply and allow yourself to feel that love and how it wants to express itself now. Without hurting yourself, without borrowing on your rent or spending money you don't have, act on the love you feel now. Do not defer its expression. Call, send flowers, gas up the car and go. If you truly don't have the money, call out with your love anyway, entrust it to the universe. Be the love you feel now. March 5th. Straying. So hard to feel the stone and not the ripple. The moment we stray from where we are, we create a tension between two places, where we are and where we are thinking of being. It's this tension that blocks us from the sensation of being fully alive, because being split in our attention prevents us from being authentic. Even though managing many tasks at once, being skillful in splitting our attention, is considered intelligent. For each of us, straying from where we are and coming back is a never-ending task, very much like blinking or breathing. When we incorporate this fullness of attention into our daily lives, we seldom notice it. But if we should interrupt our flow of being, we will stumble just as surely as if we were to stop seeing or breathing. That we stray from the moment is not surprising. The more crucial thing is that we return. For your meditation, center yourself and enter the moment at hand. Breathe steadily and feel yourself stray to somewhere else, to tomorrow, to the future or the past. Breathe through your straying without judgment and re-enter the moment at hand. March 6th. Returning. We carry a center that is always returning. We all stray from the moment in particular ways. If we meet someone and begin a new relationship, it isn't long before we're walking hand in hand while wondering if we will sleep together. And if and when we do, we are wondering if we will live together, and if and when we do, we are wondering if we will have children, and on and on. This happens with fear and pain as well. In diagnosis, I feared surgery. In surgery, I feared treatment. In treatment, I feared stronger treatment. In recovery, I fear recurrence. No one can avoid this straying, but our health depends on the breath that stops us from straying further. No matter how far we've gone, it is the practice of returning to whatever moment we are living now that restores us, because only when fully in each moment can we draw strength from the oneness of things. For your meditation, center yourself and feel the moment at hand. Note the vitality of energy that appears when you stop focusing on yourself. Breathe steadily and feel yourself stray. Note how that vitality lessens while straying. Breathe through your straying and re-enter the moment at hand. Note the resurgence of vitality. March 7th. Let go of the rice. In a world that lives like a fist, mercy is no more than waking with your hands open. So much more can happen with our hands open. In fact, closing and stubbornly maintaining our grip is often what keeps us stuck, though we want to blame everything and everyone else, especially what we're holding on to. There's an ancient story from China that makes all this very clear. It stems from the way traps were set for monkeys. A coconut was hollowed out through an opening that was cut to the size of a monkey's open hand. Rice was then placed in the carved-out fruit, which was left in the path of monkeys. Sooner or later, a hungry monkey would smell the rice and reach its hand in. But once fisting the rice, its hand could no longer fit back out through the opening. The monkeys that were caught were those who would not let go of the rice. As long as the monkey maintained its grip on the rice, it was a prisoner of its own making. The trap worked because the monkey's hunger was the master of its reach. The lesson for us is profound. We need to always ask ourselves, what is our rice? And what is keeping us from opening our grip and letting it go? It was upon hearing this story that I finally understood the tense ritual of rejection that exists between my mother and me. Like any child, I've always wanted her love and approval, but suddenly I realized that this has been my rice. The more it has not come, the tighter my grip. My hunger for her love has been master of my reach, even in other relationships. I have been a caught monkey, unwilling to let go. I have since unfolded the grip in my heart, and humbly, I can see now that the real challenge of surrender, for all of us, is not just letting go, but letting go of something we yearn for. The truth is that food is everywhere. Though the stubborn monkey believes in its moment of hunger that there is no other food, it has only to let go for its life to unfold. Our journey to love is no different. For though we stubbornly cling, believing in our moment of hunger that there is no other possibility of love, we only have to let go of what we want so badly, and our life will unfold. For love is everywhere. For your meditation, sit quietly and meditate on what is the rice in your fist. Breathe deeply and try to see what is keeping you from letting it go. Practice opening the fist of your heart by actually making a fist while inhaling and then opening it as you exhale. March 8th. Responsibility. I felt angry toward my friend. I told my wrath did end. I felt angry toward my foe. I told him not. My wrath did grow. William Blake. True inner responsibility centers on our willingness to give voice to whatever is happening to us in the midst of a relationship. This is important both for you and the person you are relating to. If you are not present, there is nothing to respond to. And love only becomes real in the world through our ability to respond. Bringing who you are to a relationship, being your true self, gives others the opportunity to transcend their limitations by acting on their love. It gives the other person a chance to show up, If you remain voiceless, then I can unconsciously keep living out whatever inequity or imbalance I'm involved in with you. But once you show your hurt or frustration or confusion or question, then I have the chance to stop my unconscious participation in the pattern of our relationship. The key to whether I will respond to you or not often has to do with love, the one thing that can break the inertia of old behavior. We can be driving along the endless summer highway, locked in some pattern that has become suffocating to you. But until you are moved by some sudden wind that shows the willow's trunk as we speed by, until you are moved to say, I can't go on like this. I can't have the chance to say, I don't want it to be like this either. Until you break your silence, I can't have the chance to say, what can we do to change all this? Often we spend so much time waiting for the other to catch on and see our pain, getting more and more frustrated and wounded the longer they don't. But this is the definition of a limitation, not being able to see what is obvious. So while we dread voicing our fears and hurts to one another, love has no way of being acted on without something truthful to respond to. For your meditation, center yourself and bring to mind a fear or hurt that you are bearing quietly in a relationship that matters to you. Breathe fully, and in the safety of your private space, voice what you are feeling without words. Just let it surface freely in your mind and heart. Keep breathing deeply and just get comfortable with the truth of this feeling. This is enough for today. Trust that you will know if and when and how to voice this truth to the person in your life who needs the chance to hear it. March 9th. Opening Our Deepest Eyes. The inner life of any great thing will be incomprehensible to me until I develop and deepen an inner life of my own. Parker Palmer. Everyone has an inner life. It's just a matter of opening it. What Parker Palmer wisely suggests is that we can only feel something to the degree that we are willing to meet its depth. Just as we must open our eyes, must raise our lids to see, we must raise our barriers and open our hearts and minds if we are to see and feel the essence of life around us. To develop our own inner life is tantamount to opening our deepest eyes. It has much to do with raising our walls, with living from our own depths so we can experience the depths around us. Too often, while cut off from our inwardness, we complain that the things about us are shallow and boring, not worth our attention, when more often than not, it is we who are out of touch. To see deeply, we must open deeply. For your meditation, bring to mind something or someone you've dismissed, and bring this thing or this person before your heart's opened eye. Surround the image with your deepest breathing. After a time, ask yourself, does this thing or person seem any different? March 10th, The Creator's Cycle. We survive, and then we die. An Ojibwe elder. Nothing escapes the Creator's cycle. Not plants, horses, trees, birds, or human beings. Not the life of the mind, not the life of the heart, not the life of the spirit. All living things emerge, gather, spark new life, fall apart, die, and emerge in new ways. Each soul is a gust of God's breath, unfolding in the great energy that surrounds us like an ever-moving stream. The goal is not to cheat death, but to live in the stream with a humility and aliveness that only an acceptance of death can release. When we try to deny death, we grow sick from frantically chasing any challenge that will occupy our minds. In living the other extreme, we can grow sick from thinking only of death, from letting death be all that we see. This makes a sad career of fear. Beyond all design and desire, we survive, and like stones that are eroded by forces that can never be seen or stopped, our reward is the pain and wonder of bearing our own inner beauty to the sky. What we carry deep within, if we live honestly, will inevitably be worn outwardly. The experience of living this fully has nothing to do with removing ourselves from the Creator's cycle. Too often, we struggle stubbornly in an attempt to protect ourselves from the friction of being alive, when it is precisely that friction that works our spirit into a seeable gem. We are more malleable than we think, more durable and changeable than all hope. Thin and fragrant petals do not hide from the wind. They survive to die and break ground again. Even within one life, we shred and reroot, we break, bleed, and rearrange into yet another beautiful thing that learns how to reach. Resisting this process doubles our pain. Singing our way through it is the source of wisdom and beauty. For your meditation, what is your greatest fear about dying? What is your greatest fear about living? Do these fears have anything in common? How would you shape your life if you didn't have these fears? And what if you shaped your life in this way anyway? March 11th. Benefit of the pose. As long as you do not live totally in your body, you do not live totally in the self. B.K.S. Iyengar. In studying yoga, teachers of all traditions will advise students to be still after certain positions in order to feel the benefit of the pose. This is a great practice for all of life. In countless ways, we work so hard to get there, only to bypass feeling the deep rewards of inhabiting the space we arrive in. This is especially true in how we touch each other. We are often so preoccupied with the next move, or if there will be a next move, that we seldom feel the deep rewards of simply holding each other. By treating each moment of touch as a consummation in itself, we can practice feeling eternity. This is a meditation to be done with your partner. Sit quietly and breathe deeply while touching each other's arms. Feel each other's being in the bodies that carry you. After several minutes, kiss each other slowly with your eyes open. Now keep touching each other's arms lightly while searching each other's eyes. This is a meditation for yourself. Sit quietly in front of a mirror and focus on the body you are in. Breathe deeply and enter the field of your eyes. Breathe slowly and feel your soul like a pool of clear water just beneath your eyes. Breathe fully and feel the water of your spirit wash against the shore of your body. March 12th. In the likeness of everything. Everything in the universe is interconnected. Within each, it is reflected. Lord's Pitta. I think this insight explains why we are so drawn to certain things. Why of all the fallen branches, I will go to the one that most resembles the way I've had to bend all my life. Why of all the places you could return to, you choose the lip of a cliff worn featureless by wind, because it lets you feel the worn lip of your heart that you show no one. It seems that we humans have always been drawn to find ourselves in the life about us. But too often in doing so, we break everything down until everything resembles us. Too often, though we seldom mean to, we take in life the way we do food, chewing it into unrecognizable bits that need to be swallowed. But the kind of food that living offers must be taken in whole, as it is, or it loses its wisdom and power and grace. So this is our ongoing challenge, not to turn everything into us. In truth, the deepest function of humility is that it helps us take experience in on its own terms, not violating its own nature, all in an effort to be nourished by life that is different from us. Through this effort, we find the corresponding seeds of such life in us. They are the common seeds of grace that can sustain us. In truth, we each carry within our own innate makeup, like chromosomes, the minute aspects of everything that forms the universe. And so the art of freedom becomes the necessary adventure of grasping the secrets that are everywhere in the open and stirring their aspects within us in such a way that we come alive, learning from the fish how to surface and dive, from the flower how to open and accept, from the stone how to crack and let light in, and from the birds that wings are more useful at times than brains. Rather than finding ourselves in everything, we are challenged daily to find everything in ourselves, till being human is evolving inwardly in the likeness of everything, shaping ourselves to the wonders we find, until like birds who have known this forever, we too make song at the mere appearance of light. For your meditation, sit quietly and bring to mind a favorite place in nature where you like to go. It might be an open field or a waterfall or a stream or a path in the woods. Go there in your mind and feel the one aspect that keeps bringing you back there. It might be the wind through the grass or the sound of the water or the light through colored leaves. In your mind, enlarge this one compelling aspect and enter it more fully. Become the grass or the water or the leaf. Breathe slowly and let what you love about this place teach you how you are grass-like or water-like or leaf-like. March 13th. Opening to Faith. Once a man was about to cross the sea. A wise man tied a leaf in a corner of his robe and said to him, "Don't be afraid. Have faith and walk on the water. But look here. The moment you lose faith, you will drown." Sri Ramakrishna. We often move away from pain, which is helpful only before being hurt. Once in pain, it seems the only way out is through. Like someone falling off a boat, struggling to stay above the water only makes things worse. We must accept we are there and settle enough so we can be carried by the deep. The willingness to do this is the genesis of faith, the giving over to currents larger than us. Even fallen leaves float in lakes, demonstrating how surrender can hold us up. We can learn from the leaves that ducks swim around. In life as in water, when we curl up or flail, we sink. When we spread and go still, we are carried by the largest sea of all, the sea of grace that flows steadily beneath the turmoil of events. And just as fish can't see the ocean they live in, we can't quite see the spirit that sustains us. Again and again, the onset of pain makes us clutch and sink. But life has taught me that how we first open after doubling over is crucial to whether we will heal at all. For your meditation, when you can, walk or sit by a lake or pond and watch the leaves float on the surface. Breathe like a fallen leaf and think of nothing. Just breathe and let your heart and mind be carried, however briefly, by the spirit you can't quite see. March 14th. Ancient Friends. One climbs, one sees. One descends, one sees no longer, but one has seen. There is an art in conducting oneself in lower regions by memory of what one has seen higher up. When one can no longer see, one can at least still know. René Dumal. In the 1700s, in the Tang Dynasty in China, the poet Li Po wrote what is now a famous poem, Letter in Exile. It's for his ancient friend So Kin of Rakuyo. In the poem, we learn that the two have been deep, lifelong friends, though they have only been together a handful of times. By the end, Li Po is awash with his old friend's presence and says, "What is the use of talking? And there is no end of talking. There is no end of things in the heart." We are moved to ask, how is it possible? They have spent more time apart than together. Yet the presence of a friend like this can shape one's entire life. If blessed, we have one, or maybe, if wealthy in blessings, two friends like this during our time on earth. It's as if Li Po and So Kin are stars in each other's constellation, brief but enduring points of light. The difficulty has always been how to make it across the dark from point of light to point of light. This is the province of faith, the preservation of presence when we are not lighted. This friendship itself is a metaphor for another kind of friendship, our lifetime kinship with truth, with love, with unity, with God. Like Li Po without So Kin, we may spend much of our time unaware and unenlightened, yet the presence of truth and God, like a deep and ancient friend, can shape our entire lives. So the inner task becomes, how do we make a lasting friendship with the unities that are larger than us? How do we keep their light in our heart when no stars appear in sight? For your meditation, breathe deeply and recall one special moment of truth in your life that has guided you over the years. Breathe lovingly and bring this truth into view. Smile and bow to this truth like an old friend you haven't seen in years. Pray to it with gratitude. March 15th. The Power of Symbols. If you truly hold a stone, you can feel the mountain it came from. A caveman picking berries was cornered by a wild and now extinct creature, and when he was spared by the sudden snap of a tree limb that scared the beast off, he took a piece of the fallen bough as a good luck charm. And so the story of symbols began. People have always saved scraps of their experience to help remind them of the forces of life that can't always be seen. Filled with the timeless rhythm of the ocean, we pocket a shell and carry it thousands of miles to know that presence of ocean when we are hours from the sea. It's why we treasure certain songs, why we save ticket stubs and dried out flowers. Symbols are living mirrors of the deepest understandings that have no words. I know of two friends who made it through Vietnam. They were rehabilitated in Italy, and before coming home, they split a copper lira, each holding dear the other's half, as if it were the break of heart forever left in that godforsaken jungle. We ask the smallest items of everyday life to carry unbearable meaning for us, and the dearest ones work like Aladdin's lamp. All we have to do is rub them slowly, and feelings and times long gone come and live again, or basic truths hard to keep in view return. As a boy, I remember visiting my grandfather's house. He had a milk-white bowl filled with M&Ms. It was a simple, magical treasure to me. No matter how often I reached on tiptoe, it never emptied. It's been 40 years since he died, and now, when depressed, I hold that milk-white bowl in my lap and eat a few M&Ms. And I feel better. This isn't illusion or escapism, but rather using the milk-white bowl filled with M&Ms as a living symbol that can call into my moment of sadness a deeper sense of plenitude and generosity that's always there, but not always accessible. This is the proper use of symbols, not to coldly represent ideas, but to call into being all that lives in us and about us. They help us bear witness to the painful mystery of living, and whether a crucifix, a small weeping Buddha, or a broken shell from a long-forgotten sea, they help us bear the days. For your meditation, recall a special moment in growing up. Meditate on the feeling of that moment until the scene comes into view. Slowly feel your way about this special moment and focus on a detail, a certain chair or smell of lilac, or a rainy piece of glass. With reverence, lift up this detail as a living symbol of all this special moment means to you. The next time you feel less than, bring yourself in contact with this very personal symbol. Let it open you to gifts you don't always remember. March 16th. Nature's Sway. When the wind stops, the trees still move, the way my heart creaks long after it bends. I'm always surprised at the after effect of being moved deeply by something. I can be hurt or disappointed, or feel the warmth of being loved, or the gentle sway of being temporarily left. And then I'm ready to chew on something else, seldom allowing for the feelings to digest completely. In fact, I've come to see that much of my confusion in life comes from giving my attention to the next thing too soon, and then wrapping new experience in the remnants of feelings that are not finished with me. For example, the other day I felt sad because an old friend is ill. I addressed my sadness directly and thought I'd been with this mood enough, so I continued on my way. The next day I found myself in the usual frustration of traffic and shopping, and the indifferent reactions of waitresses and clerks were suddenly making me sad, or so I thought. Though it seems obvious here in the telling, it wasn't in the happening, and I spent a good deal of misguided energy wondering if it was time to change my lifestyle. But really, I was feeling ripples of sadness about my friend's illness. The deeper lesson involves nature's sway, its approach, its impact, and especially its echo. Everything living encounters it, especially us, in the unseeable ripples of what we think and feel. Being alive takes time. For your meditation, sit quietly and focus on one feeling that recently came upon you strongly. As you breathe, attend whatever traces of its impact are still affecting you. Breathe slowly like a flag and let these traces of feeling ripple through. March 17th. A great battle raging. There is a great battle raging for my mouth not to harden and my jaws not to become like heavy doors of an iron safe, so my life may not be called pre-death. The Israeli poet Yehuda Amichai. There is an ancient Greek myth that carries within it, like a message in a bottle, one of the most crucial struggles we face as living beings. It's the story of a gifted musician, Orpheus, whose love, Eurydice, is taken by Hades, the god of the underworld. Orpheus is so grief-stricken that he travels to the land of the dead to plead with Hades to give Eurydice back. After a cold and deliberate consideration, Hades says, "You can have her. It will take you 3 days to bring her back to the land of the living. And there is one condition. You must carry her, and you must not look upon her face until you reach the light. If you do, she'll return to me forever." Unfortunately, unknown to Orpheus, Hades tells Eurydice the opposite. He will carry you to the land of the living, and you must look upon his face before you reach the light. If you don't, you'll return to me forever. Their colossal struggle fails, of course, and Eurydice is lost forever. The struggle for us, though, is ongoing, for there is an Orpheus in each of us that believes, "If I look, I will die." There is also a Eurydice in each of us that believes, "If I don't look, I will die." And so the great spiritual question after to be or not to be is to look or not to look. The personal balance we arrive at determines whether we make it out of hell or not. Though it shifts throughout our lives according to our devotions, I believe each of us is born with a natural leaning toward looking or not looking. Not surprisingly, I am one of those feminine seers. I believe that if I don't look, I will die. This probably has a lot to do with my calling to be a poet. So I admit my bias. For though, like staring into the sun too long, there are times we mustn't look to preserve our sight, more often we need to look to stay alive. Like each of us, I struggle with both, to be the keeper of secrets or the discoverer of truths. Though no one can tell us how, we have to work this great battle again and again, to leave the underworld, not to harden, and to make our way back into the land of the living. For your meditation, center yourself and breathe steadily. Bring to mind the stream of life decisions that have brought you this far. As you slow your breathing, try to understand which has defined your time on earth, the need to look or the need not to look. As you breathe evenly, try to feel which you need right now, to look or not to look, which will bring you more fully into the land of the living. March 18th. The Life of a Caretaker. Accept this gift so I can see myself as giving. I've been learning that the life of a caretaker is as addictive as the life of an alcoholic. Here the intoxication is the emotional relief that temporarily comes when answering a loved one's need. Though it never lasts, in the moment of answering someone's need, we feel loved. While much good can come from this, especially for those the caretaker attends, the care itself becomes a drink by which we briefly numb a worthlessness that won't go away unless constantly doused by another shot of self-sacrifice. It all tightens until what others need is anticipated beyond what is real, and then, without any true need being voiced, an anxiety to respond builds that can only be relieved if something is offered or done. At the heart of this is the ever-present worry that unless doing something for another, there is no possibility of being loved. So the needs of others stand within reach like bottles behind a bar that try as he or she will, the caretaker can't resist. I've experienced this even in the simple issue of calling a loved one while away from home. Even when no one expects to hear from me, I can agonize over whether to call. Often unable to withstand the discomfort of not registering some evidence of my love, I end up going to great lengths to call. In truth, caretaking, though seeming quite generous, is very self-serving, and its urgent self-centeredness prevents a life of genuine compassion. In all honesty, to heal from this requires as rigorous a program of recovery as alcoholics enlist, including sponsors who will love us for who we are. Within oneself, the remedy of spirit that allows for true giving resides somewhere in the faith to believe that each of us is worthy of love just as we are. For your meditation, center yourself and bring to mind a loved one you seem to meet more than halfway. Meditate on what makes you take the extra step. Imagine them loving you if you did nothing. Imagine loving yourself if you did nothing. Breathe and do nothing until you feel a sense of love rising for yourself. March 19th. Weakness. Our strength will continue if we allow ourselves the courage to feel scared, weak, and vulnerable. Melody Beattie. This is a prayer for the ages. In fact, it helps to define weakness in spiritual terms as any habit of mind or heart that prevents us from seeing things exactly as they are, or in their entirety, or with our entire capacity to feel. These are the blindnesses that continually keep us from truth, oneness, and compassion. We are all frail. We all make mistakes. We all fall prey to 1,000 emotions and exaggerations. But these things make us rich, not weak, if we are willing to face them squarely. In truth, it is not the tissue of our humanity that defeats us, but rather our refusal to accept who we are and to live accordingly, limitations included. Underneath it all, this blindness, in its many recurring forms, is the cause of most cruelty. For it's during those moments when we think we see so clearly that we break things that are irreplaceable, not even realizing they were precious. After breaking many things in my life, hearts, heirlooms, robin's eggs, I am humbled to admit that the only difference I see on earth between being strong or weak is the honesty with which we face ourselves, accept ourselves, and share ourselves, blemishes and all. For your meditation, hold a picture of someone you care about. It might be a picture of yourself. Close your eyes and center yourself. When opening your eyes, focus on the picture and allow yourself to see your relationship with this person exactly as it is. Close your eyes again. When opening your eyes this time, focus on the picture and allow yourself to accept this being entirely, blemishes and all. March 20th. Stirring the water. To let knowledge produce troubles and then use knowledge to prepare against them is like stirring water in hopes of making it clear. Lao Tzu. This cycle of producing troubles and then preparing against them is very much like pulling a thread that really should have been left alone. The more we pull it, the more the fabric unravels, and now we must re-sew it all. Or very much like planning too many things or committing to too many people in too short a time, and then exhausting yourself and those around you trying to make it all happen. We've all done this. A more subtle form of this revolves around the struggle to accept ourselves. Feeling unworthy or insecure, we create a goal in hopes that achieving this will make us feel good about ourselves. Then we're off scheming for success, preparing against failure, stirring the water, hoping it will go clear. All the while, the very deep resources of heart and spirit are being misapplied. Isn't this how we launch into careers that really don't call us? Isn't this how we enter relationships that really don't embrace us? Isn't this how we sometimes bring children into the world hoping they will help us go clear? The mind is a spider that, if allowed, will tangle everything and then blame the things it clings to for the web it wants to be free of. I have done this with dreams of greatness and hopes of love, wanting so badly to see myself clearly in the water while I kept stirring and stirring. Perhaps the hardest thing I've learned and still struggle with is that I don't have to be finished in order to be whole. For your meditation, sit quietly and bring to mind one thread in your heart that you have recently unraveled. Breathe deeply and consider how you have been involved in re-sewing this. Breathe evenly and try to stop. Try to put everything aside as is and let the pulled thread be. March 21st. To harbor or release. How can you follow the course of your life if you do not let it flow? Lao Tzu. The pollen collects until the rain washes away whatever has not been taken as seed. The moss forms on stumps and rocks until the feet of animals wear it off. And the leaves that cover the path disintegrate in time to show the lost their way. It's the same with us. Our dreams collect like pollen till the sweat and tears of our living them washes away whatever has not become possible. Our soft, gnarly clumps of attachment grow out of our stone, joy and sorrow alike, till what is food is eaten and what is not is worn away. Like fallen leaves, our memories cover our path till they are remembered out of existence, setting us free. Often the pain of resisting makes us rust like iron, and in order to re-enter the flow of life, we need to be scraped back to our original surface. Our feelings, if not released, bred the heart with their grit. Like windows filmed by weather, we wait on loving hands to be rubbed clear. This is inevitable. Experience covers us over, and the expressive journey lets us come clean to the table of light. Again. All things in existence participate in this involuntary cycle. For human beings, the process of living stains us repeatedly with the grit of being here, with heartache and disappointment and the pointedness of being human, which can sicken us if harbored or make us whole if released. Again and again, we, more than any other life form, have this majestic and burdensome power to harbor or release the impact of our experience. Humbly, we are asked to keep the flow real between what is taken in and what is let out. We have only to breathe to remember our place as a living inlet. Experience in, feelings out. Surprise and challenge in, heartache and joy out. In a constant tide, life rushes in, and in constant release, we must let it all run back off. For this is how the earth was made magnificent by the sea, and how humankind is carved upright again and again by the ocean of spirit that sets us free. For your meditation, as you cross the doorway of your home into the world today, breathe deeply and ask yourself, what is it about being human that you are most grateful for? Be with this question as you move through your day. Tonight, as you re-enter your nest, breathe deeply again and ask yourself, what is it about being human that continues to surprise you? Be with this question as you rest and sleep through the night. March 22nd, Sabbath time. Work when there is work to do. Rest when you are tired. One thing done in peace will most likely be better than 10 things done in panic. I am not a hero if I deny rest. I'm only tired. Susan McHenry. When I need to be refreshed or renewed, I return to doorways of heart that have opened me before. I walk and stand beside the big willow and wait for its familiar sway to speak to me. I replay that special piece of piano music that made its way into the sore crease of my heart and let things unfold. I make some tea and sit in my favorite chair and carefully pull out my old and tattered E.E. Cummings book and read, "I Thank You, God, for Most This Amazing Day." I try to open the hours with softness and silence, the two threads that unravel into gratitude, and wait for the miracle to return. This is the renewing atom of Sabbath for me. I try to start each day with such a small, endearing moment before the bumps and nicks and noise rush in, before the confusions and conflicts tighten my sense of things. For me, the heart constricts and dilates like the eye. When it's constricted, there is no rest. The world seems smaller and meaner and full of danger. So Sabbath time becomes essential as a practice that dilates everything tight. These private moments of rest restore, make ore out of rest, and loosen the knots of the world by slowing down the heart. In rest, I always remember that what ties me to the earth is unseen. Just the other day I was constricted. My heart was beating like a heron awakened in the weeds, no room to move. Tangled and surprised by the noise of my mind, I fluttered without grace to the center of the lake which humans call silence. I guess if you should ask, peace is no more than the underside of tired wings resting on the lake, while the heart in its feathers pounds softer and softer. For your meditation, practice loosening the knot in your heart by placing your hands palm up in your lap. With each in-breath, tighten your hands briefly. With each out-breath, relax your hands till they rest like the tired wings they are. March 23rd. Never knowing where we fly. Birds learn how to fly, never knowing where flight will take them. There's a deep and humbling lesson in the way of birds. Their wings grow and stretch and span patches of air, first tentatively and then with confidence. They lift, they pump, they glide, they land. It seems for birds, it's the act of flying that's the goal. True, they migrate and seek out food, but when flying, there's the sense that being aloft is their true destination. Unlike birds, we confuse our time on earth with obsessions of where we're going, often to the point that we frustrate and stall our human ability to fly. We frequently tame and hush our need to love, to learn, to know the truth of spirit, till we can be assured that our efforts will take us somewhere. All these conditions and hesitations and yes buts and what ifs turn the human journey upside down, never letting the heart, wing that it is, truly unfold. Yet without consideration or reservation, it is simply the presence of light that stirs birds to sing and lift. They do not understand concepts such as holding back, or only investing if the return seems certain. In this, we are the only creatures that seek out guarantees. And in so doing, we snuff the spark that is discovery. Just how often do we cripple ourselves by not letting love with all its risk teach us how to fly? How many times do our hearts stall because we won't let the wingspan of our passion open us fully to our gifts? How frequently do we search for a song of guidance that can only come from inside us? I know that over the years, through fear and expectation, my mind has gathered and hoarded places I needed to go, things I needed to have, selves I needed to be. But here I am, without most of them, the goals and wants all used up in learning how to love. So try as I do to imagine and construct where I'm headed, try as I will to plan and know what this life of feeling means, it is the pulse of what I feel itself that lifts me into spirit. In truth, wings don't grow any differently to fit south or east or west, and our lives, no matter how we train ourselves, are more fundamental than any direction of worldly ambition. We, like the birds, are meant to fly and sing, that's all, and all our plans and schemes are twigs of nest that once outgrown, we leave. For your meditation, meditate on some desire you have hesitated to give life to. It might be your want to dance or play the piano, or an impulse to travel somewhere that is calling you, or the urge to get to know someone, even yourself. Breathe, letting the feeling rise unencumbered. Breathe and focus on your hesitation. It might stem from a fear of failure or rejection, or a fear of the unknown. Breathe through your hesitation, knowing that just as wings can only fly if they flap, your ability to live deep things, to be in relation to other life, will grow only if you try. March 24th. Even in the dark. To be broken is no reason to see all things as broken. Seldom seen growing along the ocean floor, the white-plumed anemone is a watery blossom. It is white lace opening under tons of black, opening as if bathed in the sun while so far from the sun. This is the trick to staying well, isn't it? To feel the sun even in the dark. To not lose the truth of things when they go out of view. To grow just the same. To know there is still water even when we're thirsty. To know there is still love even when we're lonely. To know there is still peace even when we're suffering. None of this invalidates our pain, but only strengthens our way back into the light. For your meditation, close your eyes and feel the fact of the sun. It will be there when you can see again. Inhale deeply through the part of your heart that is closed and feel the fact of love. It will be there when you can feel again. Breathe slowly through the part of you that doubts and feel the fact of life. It will be there when you can open your spirit as you did when you were born. March 25th. The ear as petal. The ear is only a petal that grows from the heart. When we hear each other, it all becomes a garden. Just what does it mean to listen? We have all exhibited the remarkable mental dividedness whereby we choose not to pay attention, and yet when asked, we can recite word for word what's been said. Listening arises from a deeper place, and it seems we can only hear the living to the extent that we have truly lived, only understand pain and joy to the extent that we have allowed ourselves to be touched by life. If the ear grows from the heart like a petal, then, as roots absorb rain and sun until a simple flower opens, the heart must absorb both tears and joy in order to sprout an ear that can truly hear. I remember, years before cutting my feet in search of a path, sitting on my immigrant grandmother's hospital bed, watching her wince as they put gauze on her bedsore heels. I remember, years before I saved my golden retriever from drowning, watching a co-worker cry for his dead dog, trying to understand how he could love an animal more than a person. And I remember, years before having to start my life over, racing down a farmhouse road in the middle of the night to see my father-in-law's proud eyes jut as the barn he built 30 years before was burning to the ground. It was only later that I felt their pain, and even more their true joy in caring for things. To be sure, we don't have to experience the same things to receive each other, but we do have to experience what is ours to live through before life will show its roots. What does it take to truly listen? The breakdown of everything that parades between our hearts. If I dare to hear you, I will feel you like the sun and grow in your direction, and you in mine. For when we hear each other, it all becomes a garden. It all becomes edible. For your meditation, sit with a trusted loved one and meditate on a story of joy or pain that you have heard more fully over time. Share with each other why this story has stayed with you. How has your understanding of this story deepened over time? Breathe slowly and open your heart more fully to one human moment you chose not to pay attention to during the last week. March 26th. Feeling your feelings. The fastest way to freedom is to feel your feelings. Gita Balin. This sounds pretty simple, but though it's easy to know you have feelings, easy to know their weight and agitation and suddenness of mood, it is another more subtle matter to feel them, that is, to let them penetrate your being the way wind snaps through a flag. This is necessary because if we don't feel our feelings all the way through, they never leave us, and then we do all kinds of unusual things to get out from under them. This is the cause of many an addiction. I've diverted myself many times by becoming involved in what surrounds my pain or sadness while never feeling the thing itself. So when someone asks me how I feel, I wind up retelling the circumstance of the pain, but not feeling it. Or strategizing what to do next, but not feeling it. Or anticipating reactions, but not feeling what is mine to feel. Or swimming in the anger of injustice, but not diving through the wound. Though we fear it, feeling our feelings is the only clear and direct way to free our hearts of pain. For your meditation, meditate on the